Hello and welcome to Androids and Assets. I'm Marshall.
And I'm Steven.
Today we are introducing a recurring segment, episodes.
Sure.
I'm not sure. It's not a segment on an episode, but it's a recurring episode type, something we haven't done before. But we are going to rewatch in sequential order Deep Space Nine, Star Trek.
Yeah, we are.
And every other week, and maybe those times that we didn't get an actual new episode ready for you, it'll serve sort of as reruns and buffer. We're going to put out Star Trek for you to listen to, where we talk about each episode. We'll give you a brief plot summary of the episode, talk about some of the themes, what we saw, what they were talking, what we think they were trying to convey in that episode, and what we took away from it, and what we think they got wrong. So, without further ado, and without yet having a pithy name for this episode type,
we're gonna get there. I'm voting Deep Dive Nine.
I mean, if you have an idea,
see if that's the one,
send it to us.
Yeah, it's the Harry Potter thing we did, except we're actually gonna follow through, maybe. So,
well, I mean, Harry Potter is annual, and
right,
watch out November. Because
okay, that's
or December, maybe December.
Yeah,
watch out coming months.
There will be another one of
There's
those
gonna
Harry
be another
Potter
Harry Potter.
We're gonna get there. Oh, yeah, good.
So, season one, episode one and two, it's a two-parter, just introducing Deep Space Nine.
You meet the Sisko,
you meet his command crew, you know. He's excited to be working with O'Brien, who we know obviously from Enterprise. Remember that...
The Next Generation.
Sorry. Yeah, well, from the Enterprise.
The Enterprise. Okay.
D. The Enterprise D. C? D. I don't know. It's hard to remember how many ships have blown up at this point. Remember that Deep Space Nine was a spinoff of The Next Generation in some ways. The Next Generation was in season four or five at this point, and was doing really well. So they thought, hey, let's capitalize on this and get another story going. So in the first episode, you actually see the Enterprise drop off some of the crew, and Picard makes an appearance a couple of times, sort of as like that warm handoff from The Next Generation to Deep Space Nine. So viewers were comfortable with the new show.
This is like that show you like, guys.
Yeah. So we meet Commander Benjamin Sisko. He's going to be running this abandoned Cardassian space station orbiting Bajor.
Well, first we meet him and his command crew, and then everyone is murdered by Locutus because we realize Sisko was at Wolf 359. Wolf 359. I'm learning. I'm buckling
Locutus
down.
Of Borg came in and kicked ass.
Yeah.
And then Sisko obviously holds a grudge against Picard for this.
Yeah, because Picard killed his wife.
Yeah,
and now he's got to be, and now, like, Picard's his boss.
Oh, I hate that Picard.
he's the worst.
My worst enemy. And then they meet, and he's, like, angry.
Do I know you?
And Picard, have we met? Yeah, we met. At Wolf 359 on the field of battle.
And I just really, I wish Picard turned and said, I should have killed you when I had the chance. But we never get that. We never get that line.
You see Picard thinking it, though. Like, he turns away, super angry, sits down. I trust you have everything you need.
I feel like whoever wrote the dialogue, the script, has anger issues. Because everyone is literally just flying off the handle at everyone else. All of the time.
For everything.
Yeah, for nothing. It's like,
oh, hey, can I give you a hand here? I don't know. Have you ever used your hands?
That's basically what happens, yeah.
Whoa, I'm so I just offered to help out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, do it then. Don't offer to do things. Just do things.
Which I think is like why I myself, as a young man, was like, yeah, this is how real people talk. Don't live in this nice suburban bubble. People are real and just call each other assholes all the time for no reason.
Yeah. It explained some of my earlier years. I modeled myself after Sisko. People hated
that
me.
That was your management style.
You know, when two people aren't working well together, you just sit them down in a room and you yell at them and you take their kids hostage.
These are things Sisko does during this episode. Most notably, to keep like vendors on the station, basically he kidnaps one of their children.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
So Bajor, it's a backwater system. It's really like on the edge of well, not even Federation space, because Bajor is not part of the Federation. And until recently, was under the control of the Cardassians, who came in and allegedly ripped it of all of its resources.
Yeah. Whatever it, that means.
So that it was not even self-sustaining anymore. We're not sure exactly what that means, because it's still a planet with life on it that hasn't died yet. So it seems to be self-sustaining. I don't know. Maybe they're just shipping in flora.
They just continue to need trucks of water. They're...
Rigel 4 is just a booming business in plants. Bring in more houseplants. We got to make this planet look nice.
Yeah. Bajor looks quite Earth-like. It's got nice big ocean, nice blue ocean. Probably looks better than Earth does right now, to be honest.
So Bajor is going through this sort of like recovery from colonialism. They've got a provisional government that no one really expects to last. They're very religious. Apparently, despite having various sides and opposing each other, they all follow one religion with a single religious leader. And if that religious leader said, hey, guys, let's not fight,
they'd all stop fighting. But she doesn't.
She doesn't. So, I question her moral authority. But the Cardassians are still around. They're still jerks. They show up, throw their weight around, and they're like, ha-ha. We're right here. Yeah.
They have the old colonial governor, Charles Gall Dukat.
Comes in, waves his dick around.
This used to be my office, and I want my chair back, Sisko.
Then they discover that there's a wormhole, and they go through the wormhole, because that's what you do. Because
God lives there. And
yeah, they encounter the prophets.
And like he cares very deeply about one person.
they Benjamin care. Sisko.
And in the true tradition of storytelling, the events of planets and civilizations is solely dependent on the interpersonal development of one dude.
One guy and his personal savior, the prophets of Bajor. Yeah.
Do you have a personal relationship with the prophets of Bajor? I have some literature on the subject.
So then, you know, Sisko's in there. The prophets are just like messing around with his mind. Apparently they just sort of like pop into his thoughts, do whatever they want to him, force him to relive whatever memories. That's their only way of communicating with him.
Is through his own memory. Yeah. And so, well, this is where and this gets to like the whole thing. Like really it's about if you want to drive it like kind of like emotionally, what's the driving piece of Deep Space Nine, especially in the early seasons, is just Sisko's PTSD, basically.
Oh, yeah. Huge trauma. I mean, he did watch his wife die.
Sure, yeah. No, yeah. It is traumatic. And
he didn't have Counselor Troy around.
Yeah. Well, I think that would have fixed it right up.
I mean, because she was a good counselor, not because she would have replaced his wife.
I know. This is a counselorship. Where is the ambassador? Wait.
So then Sisko sort of, the prophets are like afraid of him and kind of angry at him. And they're like, maybe we should just shut this thing down. And then Sisko's like, no. I'm a good guy. And the prophets seem to say, okay, maybe you are, but like, you got to teach us about humans and who you are. So it's sort of,
they're four-dimensional.
It's very reminiscent of Encounter at Farpoint, the pilot of The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Where Picard encounters Q.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm putting humanity on trial because you guys seem like terrible people. And Picard's like, we're not actually that bad anymore. Sisko's like, whoa, yeah, I mean, we're humans and we're flawed, but also we're kind of cool.
I mean, the prophets are kind of four-dimensional hillbillies. So like, gee, Gorsh, what's this death thing you're all talking about?
You know, it is really sad.
Yeah.
You just read my mind. You communicate to me in my own language, but you pretend you don't know what words mean?
Like, that's kind of crazy, guys.
Or just mean.
Yeah.
Can you explain the concept of time to me right now?
I think you kind of know already.
It's like, we're just kidding.
We're just fucking with you. It's fine. We're going to kill these Cardassians for you. Don't worry.
So then Sisko sort of like establishes relations with the prophets, comes out of the wormhole, saved some Cardassians' lives, and was like, you know what? Maybe this Deep Space Nine thing isn't so bad.
Gonna work out after all. Freeze frame, roll credits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he jumps up in the air.
He's smiling, yeah.
Ka-chee! That doesn't happen, but it could have.
It should have.
It was the time, and the effects were right there.
It was 1997, 96?
No, it had to be earlier.
Yeah?
Well, because 1987 is when The Next Generation started, so this is like 93.
Okay, yeah, that tracks for me.
Yeah.
I had my Ninja Turtles backpack at the time, so.
So I guess some of the major themes that we saw in this episode, they were really talking, they talked hard about religion. They had the prophets. As soon as Sisko got on the station, there was a priest who was like, you have to come talk to my Pope right now. You have to. And he's like, whoa, like, let me catch my breath here, dude. And the guy just like came back and pestered him. So religion is going to be a big thing. It's been brought up, like it was brought up by a few characters. You see it in a few instances. The church is sort of an oppressive force.
Yeah.
On Bajor,
yeah, they're kind of a crazy theocracy, which is an interesting alliance between. It just goes to show how like kind of ruthlessly pragmatic the Federation is. Because, you know, as much as they like, you know, I don't think we'd be down with them with like, you know, like a theocracy like the Bajorans. Yeah, they're pretty down with it when it comes to if they can use it to get one over on the Cardassians.
Well, I mean, they're still saying like we can't violate the Prime Directive.
Yeah, violate everything but the Prime Directive. But you have like Major Kira, who's like the liaison officer / first officer to Sisko on the station. He's kind of like, you know, like she is like the voice of sanity and reason, basically, and tells them all they're imperious colonialist assholes. So she's like the best character, and she's like, you know, she like grew up like throwing Molotov cocktails into limos and shit. So yeah. She's like, I've really got a thing for that. It's the second time that's
he's got a crush on Kira.
Anyway, but yeah, like she, you know, she grew up like, you know, blowing shit up like and just fighting in the streets. So she's pretty cool, and she's probably the most interesting character.
The show is really gonna lean hard on discussions about colonialism and post-colonialism.
If that is even a thing.
Well, yeah, is there post-colonialism?
Yeah.
I mean, Kira Nerys definitely is like, we just got rid of colonial overlords. And then the first thing that we do is invite more colonial overlords.
Yeah.
I'm not excited you guys are here. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say that it's post-colonialism when the new colonialism is just the Federation. It's a newer, cleaner, kinder colonialism.
Kinder, gentler machine gun hand. Yeah.
Oh, that's the reference I was going for. And then kind of along with that colonialism, post-colonialism, I think they're going to talk about like incrementalism and like the Iron Curtain.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's definitely this whole like NATO strategy of encirclement, like just installing bases everywhere, and to promote your global hegemony.
And so, this might have been even earlier. So the sort of Soviet era might have been just the year before, right? Like,
yeah,
that officially the Iron Curtain fell like a year ago,
3 years before. Yeah,
yeah. So it was much more of a thing at the time.
Yeah. Well, I think the U.S., I mean, actually, I think to some extent, like, the U.S. system of, like, global bases and, like, kind of U.S. imperialism was actually kind of in its heyday post-Gulf War. So this kind of notion that, like, yeah, the U.S. does go into countries and establish bases everywhere and kind of operate a sort of perpetual military operation over the...
For the good of those countries.
For the good of everyone. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was really kind of the notion. So, I mean, definitely this lays on very hard. The Federation is Space America.
Yeah.
Apple pie. Baseball. Tom Sawyer. Oh, my God.
And then they're going to talk about trade because they've sort of set up that Bajor doesn't have anything of its own. Mm-hmm. Except for now it has a wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant.
Which is,
so,
for those of you who don't understand, so like think of the Milky Way galaxy as a pie, and am I doing this right?
Yeah.
And like it basically, if you cut that pie into four pieces, you get the alpha, beta, gamma, and delta quadrants. And they're really, really, each slice of pie is really, 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 really big. The alpha quadrant is where the Federation is. it only takes up a small part of the Alpha Quadrant. So things in the other quadrants are very... The quadrant is like beyond the realm of space.
I think all of the original series and TNG happen in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah.
Like, as far as they travel and discover new things and new planets, they still have not left their quadrant.
Yeah, and so they go to the Gamma Quadrant, which is the farthest possible quadrant. Well, I guess they're all kind of, depending on where you are, it's all relative. But it's like, you know, yeah, it's like, it's the one that's directly opposite from it. So that gives you some concept. It doesn't really actually give you any concept of how far away it is, but it's very far away.
They said 70,000 light years.
Yeah. So it's too far, I guess, to travel by conventional warp travel. So this wormhole is going to really cinch that up. It's really going to change the political and trade relationship between the two portions of space.
And if Bajor can extract some rent from that, then it might be able to survive as a system, even though it apparently has nothing worth anything left on its planet. You may have noticed that point bothers me.
Well,
so, okay, the overarching themes. But now just to talk quickly about this episode. There were some economics things in it.
Sure.
Obviously, the first one, Bajor. But why? If Bajor had actually just had everything good taken off of it. And I mean, when I think of everything good, I'm talking like water.
Oxygen.
Talking air, breathable air, any sort of minerals, any plants that might be useful, animals that you could eat or skin. Like, when you're done, you should be left with
literally nothing. It should just be a dark rock.
Yeah, like a Mars, or maybe not even a Mars, because a Mars would have, like, we would have strip mined it.
Yeah, for all its sweet, sweet iron.
Like, it would just be like this pocked wasteland. You wouldn't have people living on it anymore. But it sustains a population, and it looks pretty idyllic, and people are there. I'm like, I don't know, guys.
I mean, to quote Trump, they got pretty nice beaches there. You can see that when they're firing their cannons. You put some nice resorts there.
I do not know that quote.
He's talking about North Korea. He's,
wow.
You know, how they could build resorts there.
Beautiful. So maybe they don't have like strategic resources, but that doesn't mean that it's not
crystal.
Like a perfectly good planet. They have infrastructure, and they have people, and really, like, unless you're an expansionary power, which I'm not sure the Bajorans are, it sounded, and I could be wrong, but it sounded like the Bajorans had space travel for the last 10,000 years and have just been, like, hanging out on their own planet. Like, wow, Bajor's great. I'm not leaving. I don't want to go anywhere else.
The space is cold and empty and dumb.
Yeah, like,
fuck it.
So they stay at home. Like, they're not a backwards race. They're just like, we don't need to expand. Like, Bajor is perfect. I'm not going anywhere. I'm perfectly happy where I am. Thank you.
Which is all well and good until a different spacefaring civilization comes along and says, hey, we want to push your shit in.
Which, I mean, sure, they did. But then they left, and Bajor could still just go back to being like,
perfectly fine.
Hey, guys, just leave us alone, all right? We're going to stay down here and eat some animals and drink some water. Because we got lots of it.
Enjoy our fine Bajoran space tequila.
Yeah.
Or whatever they make there.
But not Synthale, because it's apparently terrible.
Yeah, well, never.
That's just... Obviously, unless it's like an expansionary, growth-oriented species or culture.
Yeah, state.
Bajor seems economically just fine. Like, as a planet, it's just fine. You could have a colony there of people who just, you know, free love and religion, whatever.
Yeah.
They have everything they need.
Yeah. And so I think that's kind of like Kira's agenda. Kira's agenda is just like we need to just be independent and do our own thing, and we don't actually need to be involved in this interplanetary intrigue and dumb space war.
Yeah. And I mean, it just makes you question, like, what do people mean when they say, oh, we took everything that was economically good out of a planet, and there's no economy left there. Like, I don't know. It seemed like people were still trading. You still had merchants on Bajor.
Yeah. The Ferengi are around.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's not a barren nothingness.
I'm so excited for when we get some rules of acquisition. I just want to.
They're all great. At one point in the episode, sort of as a threat to Captain Picard, Sisko says, well, you know, yeah, I took this job, but I don't even know if I want it. And I was thinking of leaving for civilian service on Earth. And I was like, oh, okay, but like, why haven't you? Like,
yeah, this is the Federation, yo. I mean,
you don't need money.
Yeah.
You don't need anything. They supply you with everything you need. If you're not happy what you're doing, just quit doing it and go home. Your dad has a restaurant. You love to cook. Just go home to your dad and do what you love.
Yeah. They pay the same.
Yeah. Being a gourmet chef and putting your life on the line as a commander of a far outpost, same salary, far less risk of death as a gourmet chef. Jake might actually have some kids his own age around for a while. Stability, you know? Kids need stability when they're growing up.
I'm pretty sure what kids need to do is kids need to be dragged into the middle of a giant ethnic conflict and then continuously threatened with death.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But if you can't get that,
yeah,
stability.
Fair enough. But then how can they have a weird space Rudyard Kipling thing? And, oh, okay, can we talk about, so when we first meet Sisko and Jake, they're in the holodeck. And Jake is clearly running the Tom Sawyer program because he's sitting on a bridge in coveralls with his shoes off fishing. just like, why?
What are you doing, Tom Sawyer? Yeah, it's sort of the Whito deck.
Yeah.
it felt really weird.
Yeah.
Like he was in coveralls or overalls and they seemed too short.
Yeah, they were definitely.
It was like
yeah.
You chose to wear those?
Come on, son. This holodeck program is racist.
And sort of with that American theme, right? You have America, you have the Iron Curtain, and you just see the United States in space. There was definitely a vibe of like Bajor was free Tibet. You could just see a lot of like
I mean, a lot of that going around in the 90s. This whole like again in this like yeah this. Whole line about that, I think, which is...
I just imagine that, like, in San Francisco, you're going to have kids, like, Federation kids just lining up, like, Free Bajor!
Free Bajor!
Come on, man!
Yeah, what's their religious leader? The
Kai.
The Kai, yeah.
Kai Opaka.
Yeah, Kai Opaka is, like, selling out, like, full university auditoriums all over, all over the Federation.
They said that nobody's seen Kai Opaka for years. Because she's been off on a
very lucrative speaking tour in LA. Yeah, she's been in LA, living in her second home there.
That's how Bajor gets money.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Has no economic resources except for the charismatic speaker, Kai Opaka. Let's give her a very warm welcome.
She led the Bajoran government in exile. Yeah, so I mean, you definitely get a lot of that, yeah, I think. And so there is some, I think, I always look for the anti-communism, and I always find it. And I think that's the piece in this one, I think.
And with the Kai Opaka, you've definitely got this, like, mysticism, sort of like orientalist.
Yeah, stereotype. A Yoda.
Yeah, she's very much a Yoda. She like goes up and grabs Sisko by the ear and says, just keep breathing, as if he has a choice. And then is like, oh, so ironic. Your destiny to be the one who's going to be like the one who saves us but doesn't even want to be here. Is that ironic?
I mean, if you were destined to be there and you don't want to be there, I guess that is in a strict literary sense ironic.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But she definitely reminds me of Yoda.
I grew up in the 2000s, so like my sense of what is ironic is completely...
Yeah, it's like rain on your wedding day.
Obliterated.
The free ride when you've already paid.
It is none of those things.
Good advice that you just didn't take.
That's just dumb.
Kai Opaka, though, definitely has these like Yoda-ish sort of statements of like... Oh, you always looking for things that you like. You're looking for things that you deny yourself, and you're like, okay, I don't know what that means.
But I also know exactly what that means because
sort of wise. Like, there's if you just say it fast enough, nobody's going to question you.
You're just saying things that are the opposite of the thing you're saying. Am I saying things that are the opposite of what I'm saying, or am I? Oh yeah, that doesn't really work. I see it now. Yeah,
Dr. Bashir is a character. He is great.
I mean, the world's great. You mean the universe's greatest genius? Sorry, spoilers. Yeah, Dr. Bashir is just a fucking idiot.
Well, I mean, he shows up and he's just arrogant. And he feels like an English aristocrat showing up in India, right?
Ah, yes, this is where the medicine is. No cushy research grants for me. I choose to be here to see all you poor people.
This is where heroes are made.
Yeah. And Kira's like, fuck you. This is where I live.
Yeah.
Eat shit.
Wow. I guess you can bring your medicine to the natives now. You're like, yeah, that's fair. He was being a dick.
He definitely was.
And then
we meet Dax and Chief O'Brien are the other two characters, I think.
Yes.
Dax is...
Go on about them.
Main characters. Dax is, I guess, somebody with a symbiote. She has a worm in her belly.
Yeah, well, Jadzia Dax has a worm in her belly.
Yeah.
She is the worm in her belly also.
Right. Yeah.
Jadzia is the girl. Dax is the worm.
Yeah, and so she's from a species of like symbiotes, and the last person, the worm, was in a different person,
Curzon,
who was an old man when Sisko knew him, and Dax has since moved on from Curzon to Jadzia, and Sisko just has to get his like weird kind of pervy digs on, like, I knew you when you were an old man, but I
you're hot now.
Which is just,
old man,
just gross. Yeah, so, which is just gross and weird. But you know, it was the 90s, so what you gonna do?
We also we did meet Quark earlier.
Oh, Quark's important too. Yeah.
Quark is a super important character, and when you meet him, it's because Sisko has just put in prison his nephew.
Yeah,
a child, a young kid.
Who commits a
petty crime, and Quark says, you know, like, we're leaving the station in a couple of days. Just let me take the kid. I'll beat him up and we'll be out of your hair anyway. And Sisko's like, no, put him in the brig. He's going to waste away for the best years of his life. Sisko.
This violates several Federation policies.
Wow.
The intelligentsia in San Francisco would frown on this.
But he'll do what he's got to do to make this space station work.
Including kidnapping. Yeah. So that's how he incentivizes Quark, too. Quark and the business community. For a guy who doesn't care about money, he's a friend of the business community.
He also makes a really weird statement when they walk away and people are like, are you actually going to lock that kid up? And he's like, well, you know, the Ferengi have a history of plea bargains. So do you.
So do humans.
That's you. You're... The Federation is still based off of common law. Plea bargains are probably still a part of that. Yeah. I'll plead guilty, but just like, don't make me work on the... Send me to the nice shipyard when you're going to force me into indentured servitude.
So, you can meet one of those white collar... send me to the Bastille.
Yes. So, I mean, it's a great episode to really loop you in. Really grabs you, says, don't forget, The Next Generation is a really good TV show that you love. You're also going to love this one. Hook, like, it gets its hooks into you by saying there's some weird space gods in this, and you're going to see more of them, and has some quirky characters that are just like a little bit off. They don't get along. It's a team of people who just met. Ragamuffins. They're angry. They're hardworking.
Have you ever just wished cowboys talked about subspace nonsense and like generative fields and thetons? Well, this is the show for you because it's basically it's I think but then the colonialism, like, it's this frontier kind of thing. There's like a my dad always used to say that my dad has like this very committed theory that like Deep Space Nine is a remake of the television series Gunsmoke. It's a complex taxonomy. He mapped it all out. Anyway, he's very committed to this bit. And maybe we'll explore the Gunsmoke.
We should get him on when we finish. Later.
Yeah, we'll
like
have
on
him,
the last episode.
We'll have him on as a guest. Oh my God. How many of these are we going to have to do? Deep Space Nine ran for 9 seasons.
Seven seasons.
Seven seasons. Okay.
So there's only like 140 of them.
Only 100. So see, I guess 140 weeks. Let's see you in 4 years at the end of this. We're not going to finish.
We're only going to do 26 in a year, though.
Despair. Yeah, I know. That's why it's going to see you in 4 years. 5 years.
At least.
Yeah.
Maybe six.
Might be seven.
Oh, boy.
Well, this is what happens.
You know, this podcast is never going to end now.
Start
this
a podcast impulsively.
So, thanks very much. That's the first episode of Deep Space Nine.
Deep Dive Nine.
We're working on it. We're not married to that.
Nine Space Nine. 999. Brooklyn Deep Space.
We're gonna try this out. Let us know if it's terrible. Because then, you know, we'll keep doing it. It's an acquired taste. And let us know what you think. We're on Twitter at AssetDroid, or you can email us Marshall at Androids and Assets, or Stephen at AndroidsandAssets.ca.
Word.